Kuzari, we're on page 139. We're just one page short of finishing the first essay, the first mimer, which is exciting. Maybe we should make a big party. It's taken us a long time. Okay, it's not a bad idea. All right. I'll put in a request. Okay. We were learning last time about Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is responding to the request for information about the afterlife because he has observed that other religions place a great emphasis on that, and there seems to be a dearth of information contained within Jewish literature. So the first response to that was that the Torah never found it necessary to discuss the afterlife in detail because a person experiences connection to Hashem in this world on a level of sort of a spiritual connection that even transcends the level that's possible when you're in a disembodied state. So you have heaven on this earth through the prophetic experience that is unique to the Jewish people, and that's really what the Torah focuses on. The second point that he made was is that there's a wealth of Talmudic literature, of post-biblical literature within Judaism that talks a lot about the afterlife. It talks a lot about what the immortality of the soul, and there's so much within our tradition that we live every day that focuses on life after death. And so the first thing that he pointed out last week that he opened up with on the bottom of page 138 was the prayer of Elokai Neshama that a Jew is supposed to say every morning, where we thank Hashem for restoring our soul to us on a daily basis. And as part of that prayer, we say, Be'ata asid litlo mimeni, ulahachazira bi le'asid lavo. Hashem, I know that eventually I'm going to go through this process that we call, in today's terminology, we call it death. But really what it is that you're going to eventually take away my soul from my body, and you'll give it back to me, la'asid lavo. You'll restore it to my body at the time of resurrection. And so there is a daily affirmation in our belief in the eternity of the soul and in the concept of tchiyas ha'meisim. So that's the purpose, of course, as we understand, is that Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi wants to highlight the fact that this is very much in the forefront of the consciousness of every Jew, and it's very much a part of Jewish literacy that a Jew knows about the idea of the eternity of the soul. Now, of course, the appropriate time to make mention of the eternity of the soul and the migration of the soul in and out of the body is when we wake up every morning, because every morning is a mini tchiyas ha'meisim. Every morning, because a portion of our soul leaves us at night, as we know, that's what sleep is described by Chazal. And every morning when we wake up, we thank you, Hashem, for restoring our soul to us, our full, vibrant soul that allows us to be animated and to be able to think and move around and to be conscious. But that only helps to bolster our faith in the ability for the soul to move in and out of our bodies as Hashem chooses. Just like my soul departed when I slept and it's now restored back to me, so too will there be the ultimate restoration of my soul at the time of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Okay, so that's really what a person is supposed to be thinking about when they say the bracha of Elokai Neshama. And it's also a very consoling idea as well, because it really speaks to the temporary status of death. Death is a long sleep, is really what death is, and eventually the person will wake up at the time of Tchiyat HaMeitim, at the time of resurrection. And then he goes into some of the details, and this is where we're up to on page 139, paragraph number 7. And he talks about Gan Eden and Gehinom. The Garden of Eden, which is cited often by other religions, was taken from our Torah. They got it from us. And they talk about paradise in other religions. The Christians have one conception of paradise, kingdom come. And Muslims have another conception of paradise, which is, you know, the 72 virgins and all of that other very, very objectified kind of physical description of a heaven, of a paradise. But it refers to a certain spiritual plane that was prepared for man. Had man not sinned, meaning had Adam and Chava not eaten from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, he would still be there today. It's very difficult for us to know exactly what this Gan, what this garden was, what it was like. But clearly, you know, the Ramchal and many others describe it as a very spiritual place. As a matter of fact, the Ramchal in Das Tevunos says that our spiritual nature today is more like what Adam's physical nature was in the Garden of Eden. And Adam's neshama was far more ethereal and transcendent than the neshama that we have today. So it was a completely different plane of existence, and through Adam ingesting the fruit of the tree, of whatever that kind of tree was in that very ethereal plane, mankind and everything around him became much more solidified and physicalized, if that's even a word. And if we hadn't sinned, we would still be there today. That's a discussion that is really just incidental to this, and perhaps it's related to the whole idea of Tchiyas HaMeisim, because if Adam and Chava had not eaten from the tree, there would have been no necessity for a Tchiyas HaMeisim, for man to leave this world and then come back in his reconstructed state. Similarly, Gehenim is a known place outside of Jerusalem, which is a valley where fire is always burning. Now, this speaks to a very specific kind of portal of Gehenim, which we'll see is discussed in the Gemara. The belief was that there are three portals to Gehenim, to this place of purgatory, that exist on this world. And it is described as a place of constant burning. One of them is outside of Jerusalem. Many historians tell us that this was a place that when the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael for the first time, and it was occupied by idolatrous nations, this is where the Molech ceremony would take place. It was a place where they would burn fires for idolatry, and it was a pretty nasty place. Like the Aztecs had this place where they would, you know, ceremonially just slaughter people and their heads would roll down the mountain, you know, that big building. So this place of Gehenim was like the Aztec center for Canaanite idolatry right outside of Jerusalem. And that's why it was always called a place of constant burning, burning of sacrifices to the gods. And it's also considered to be a place of evil in that sense. That's the history behind this place of this.
It's not Gay Ben Hinnom. It's not the place that's called Gay Ben Hinnom.
Gay Ben Hinnom, or yeah. Gay Hinnom. Yes, it's described in the Navi, and you say for Yirmiyah as well. Yes.
I realize we're not talking about Tchiyas HaMeisim now, but if the point of Olam Haba is spiritual, why would Hashem bring the souls back into our bodies? And also, is that like a permanent thing?
Yeah, that's a long discussion. I think months and months and months ago, maybe even over a year ago, we talked about the Rambam Zigeres Tchiyas HaMeisim, about his epistle, about what resurrection is all about. It's a very lengthy discussion about what the nature of Tchiyas HaMeisim is all about. But it is a reunification between body and soul. The Ramchal, however, says that just like Adam was a much more ethereal being, even his physical essence, that's what we'll be like in Olam Haba.
So, Tchiyas HaMeisim is then a permanent state, which is Olam Haba?
Yes. Tchiyas HaMeisim is the step that is the process that a human being must go through in order to enter into Olam Haba. Because Olam Haba, according to everyone, is comprised, everyone except the Rambam, I should say, is comprised of body and soul.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was just the soul.
Yeah, well, you're a Maimonidean, that's why.
No, I was just ignorant of that.
No. So, yes, it's comprised of body and soul. That's according to the Gemara. It's quite explicit in the Gemara. That's the purpose of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Tchiyas HaMeisim is the process whereby body and soul are reunited so that we can all go to Olam Haba as both body and soul.
But I know you don't want to talk about this now because you talked about it before I came to the class, but I thought the whole purpose of Olam Haba is for spiritual pleasure. What do you need the body for?
So that's a very good question. The attitude of Chazal is that the body was very much a part of everything that you were to get you into Olam Haba. So it is only just and proper for the body to enjoy the fruits of its labor. You see, the person that you are when you look in the mirror is a combination of soul and body. It's that's that synthesis between your physical and spiritual side is what comprises your thinking consciousness, your personality. So when you leave this world, meaning that your soul and body divide, it's not fair that only your soul should enjoy the fruit of all of your efforts. It's true that your physical side was sometimes at odds with your spiritual side, but they worked in tandem to be able to get to your spiritual level, your righteousness that you have today. So therefore the body should enjoy the part that the reward as well for all of that effort. And the body will be elevated, of course, it'll be in its perfected state.
When you're 20, not 80, right?
Yeah, that's what we hope for, but even better than 20. Like there's like 20 plus, which means like all blemishes and defects will be completely rectified, right? And the body will be elevated. And so that's what Tchiyas HaMeisim is about, yes.
Does this apply to Jews that are secular as well, or?
It applies to everybody. Everybody can potentially have a portion. The Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba. All of Israel have a portion in the world to come. That's the very famous Mishnah. And the Gemara also acknowledges that non-Jews have a portion in the world to come as well, assuming that they fulfilled their commandments. But even Jews who were not particularly religious have a portion in the world to come, unless they've done something that is so dastardly that they have corrupted their Jewishness. And you don't just corrupt your Jewishness by, let's say, not being Shabbos observant. No. That not being Shabbos observant does not deny you entry into the world to come. You still have a portion. It may be, you know, it may be in not as good of a seat. You know, the person who was frum all his life and was righteous and good has, you know, an orchestra seat. And the person maybe who was perhaps not as religious and observant and kind and good and things like that still has a portion, but maybe a little bit further back, you know.
So what is the criteria for not getting in at all?
There are a number of criteria. Yeah, there are a number of criteria. The Gemara talks about different kinds of things. Number one is if you deny a belief in the world to come, if you refuse to acknowledge its existence, if you refuse to acknowledge the immortality of the soul, that's in itself a reason to deny you entry. Another way that you lose it is if a person ridicules the words of the rabbis, right? Another is a person, let's say for example, a person who willingly gives themselves up for cremation, you know, fully aware of the consequences. Because that also is an indication that they deny the idea of resurrection. Another example that the Gemara says is that if you lend money with interest, strangely enough, that's another one of the things that sort of gets you ejected from resurrection. So there are a few, but you have to be pretty low.
What if somebody does one of those things and they don't know?
Well, if they don't know, so then that doesn't count. And also, you can do tshuva even for the things that you have done wrong. You know, if a person repents and has remorse, and that also. But it's really, we've learned over the years that that those hanistaros l'Hashem Elokeinu, those hidden things of who's in and who's out, that's not for us to decide, that's for God to decide. The Gemara gives us guidelines, but we can't make any determination and pass judgment on any individual.
But in the way we all do it, because we all invest money in different funds and different things, and all of them invest in the bank, and the bank lends money with interest. So if you think about it,
It's only lending money with interest to another Jew, to a fellow Jew.
Don't know that the Jews in Korea lend money with interest for mortgages and stuff like that from the banks. And the banks invest.
So it's more of a problem if the bank is a Jewish bank. If the bank is a Gentile entity, or if the bank is not owned by any one particular entity, then it's not a problem. Israelis have a bigger problem because there's the Israeli bank's banking system. So there's the Rabbanut has dealt with this. That's not for now, though. Yes?
Any recommendations? This is incredible topic for reading more on this topic?
So why don't we do a shiur? Why don't we do a shiur next week? We can do more on this topic. For further reading, Derech Hashem, The Way of God by Luzzatto is a very good work. There's also in the back of many of the editions of that work, Derech Hashem, there is a short essay that the Ramchal has about the Messianic Age, and that's a very important essay as well. I believe Feldheim has that published in the back of their Derech Hashem, but I don't know if it's in all of their editions. I'm just at a loss to think of texts that exist in English. I'm a little hard pressed right now at the moment to get you a syllabus, but I'll try and work on that.
Not to open up a Pandora's box, but if the body and soul are part of Olam Haba, there's a limited number of souls. There's way more bodies. So, how can that work?
How do you know that?
How do I know that?
Because
I look around in the world and people die. That's the nature of physicality.
And how do you know how many souls there are?
I thought that there was that number at Har Sinai that we were all there.
Well, at the time of creation, there was a set number of souls that God created, but maybe God foresaw exactly how many bodies would come into the world. So that's the conventional explanation, but post-Talmudic commentaries believe in the concept of Gilgul HaNefesh, which is the reincarnation of the soul. And so the question is, which body comes back? Not for now. It's an interesting question. Okay, so but those are all good questions, all excellent, and maybe we'll just do a shiur maybe next time about all of these topics. Okay, so because I see you're very interested. But today I wanted to talk about Gehenna, which is... Yeah, real proud please. The word gay means valley, and Hinnom is the name of the valley. My son came back from yeshiva, told me a joke. He says, a boy comes to his father, he says, Dad, what does gay mean? So his dad is like, a little, blushes a little bit. Well, gay, it's a person who is not attracted to the opposite gender. He's attracted, it's a little bit difficult for me to describe. Oh, thanks, Dad. What does tzalmavis mean? Anyway, so that's the joke. If you got it, fine. If you didn't get it. Because gam keilech begay tzalmavis. Okay. Anyway. All right, so anyway, kid asked the simple question, we thought it was a complex question. Okay, anyway, so let's learn a little bit about Gei Hinnom. Gei is a valley. Hinnom is the name of the valley. This is a place outside of Yerushalayim. People used to burn impure bones and carcasses there, along with other things affected by spiritual impurity, and the word Gei Hinnom, therefore, from the Hebrew, is the valley of Hinnom, and it is a place of burning. And that's why this place of burning is associated with a place of suffering for the souls after they leave this world. It is because it is readily associated with a place of burning that we can see in our lives, and therefore when our sages want to talk about the ultimate purgatory area, they pointed to a place called Gei Hinnom in this world, in order to illustrate for us what the experience for the soul is in the next stage of experience, in the next place, and in the afterlife. There are a number of things that our sages tell us about Gei Hinnom. I have just three quotes from the Talmud, and then I have an essay from Rabbi Dessler, which I think is actually fascinating. Let's take a look, and we'll see how far we can get. The first one is from the Gemara in Erevin on Daf Yotes, which says, "Va'amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, shlosha pitachim yesh legehinom." There are three portals to Gehenna in this world. Echad ba'midbar, ve'echad ba'yam, ve'echad bi'Yerushalayim. One in the desert, one in the sea, and one in Jerusalem. Now, many times our sages speak in metaphor, they speak in riddle, they speak on multiple levels of understanding. I believe that this can be understood on its quite literal level, that there are many points of connection between the spiritual realm and our physical realm. And that's what our rabbis are pointing to when they talk about these three portals. Some have even suggested that the Bermuda Triangle is the portal to Gehenna in this world. And that's why crazy things happen there. Who knows? But I think that perhaps, taken on its metaphorical level, the idea of there being three portals to Gehenna is a lesson for mankind to know that there's nowhere that you can go in the world to escape the Yetzer Hara. There are doorways to Gehenna. There are doorways to hell, literally, in every juncture that a person travels in life. There's no such thing as taking the safe route. You can find Gehenna whether you're in the sea or in the desert or in the big metropolitan areas. Sometimes people feel, ugh, it's terrible here, I'll escape and go live on a farm outside the big city. You'll find Gehenna there too. I'll live in a faraway place beyond the ocean. You'll find Gehenna there too. You have to realize that you create your environment no matter where you are in the world. But in any event, the Gemara then brings various psukim to indicate that Gehenna has portals in all of those three domains. Bamidbar dichsiv yardu heim b'chol asher lahem chayim sha'ola. We know that there's a portal of Gehenna in the desert, because when Korach and his men were swallowed up by the earth, where did they go? They were swallowed up and entered through a portal to Gehenna, and that's where they went. And they were in the desert at that time. Bayam dichsiv mi beten sha'ol shivati shamata koli. That Jonah, when he's in the belly of the fish, says from the belly of Sha'ol, which is another word for Gehenna. That's what our sages understand of what Sha'ol is. One of the biblical words for Gehenna. I have cried out to you, and you've heard my voice. And Jonah was crying out when he was in the sea. And Yerushalayim dichsiv, as it says in Isaiah, Ne'um Hashem, Asher Orlo Bitzion V'Tanur Lo Yerushalayim. That God has a fire in Zion and an oven, a very large and very hot oven in Jerusalem. B'tana Devei Rebbe Yishmael, Asher Orlo Bitzion Zu Gehenim, B'tanur Lo Yerushalayim Zepischa Shel Gehenim. That there is a light in Zion refers to the entire realm of Gehenna, and an oven in Jerusalem refers to the portal of Gehenna. So even in the holiest of cities, right, don't think that I'll go to escape to Jerusalem because here it's all schmutz, it's all tumah. So I'm going to go to Yerushalayim and I'll lock myself up in a yeshiva or a seminary or a monastery or wherever it is. You'll find Gehenna there too. It's Gehenna travels with you. It's not something that you can escape from. So now the Gemara asks the question, Vesuleka, you mean that that's all there is? There's only three portals? V'ha'amar Rebbe Mirya, and Amar Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi, V'amar Lortana, Rabba Bar Mirya, B'dvei Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai. But what about what these rabbis say? They say that Shtei Timrot Yesh Begei Ben Hinom, V'oleh Ashan Mi Beinehem, that there are two pillars of smoke in the valley of Hinom, and smoke comes out of them, and that's the portal to Gehenna. So Vizuhi Shishaninu Tsini Harhar Basel Kesheros Vizuhi Pischa Shel Gehenna. And that's actually a statement by the sages that they talk about the portal of Gehenna in this very cragged mountainous area. So the Gemara says Dilma Haino de Yerushalayim, that's actually the same portal of Jerusalem. It's not in the center of Jerusalem. It's not on Rehov Ben Yehuda, but rather it's outside on the outskirts of the city, in this cragged rocky area, right outside of Jerusalem, and that's where the portal is. Another Gemara from Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, source number 2. Darash Rava Ma'idichsiv V'im Biriyah Yivra Hashem Ufatzasaha Adama Espiha. Rava expounded, What does the Torah mean what did Moshe mean when he said to God, when he said to God and to the Jewish people that God will create a new creation and the earth will open up its mouth and swallow you? Omar Moshe lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Moshe was really saying before God, Im b'ri'ah gehinom mutav v'im la v'ivra Hashem. Moshe said, God, look, if there's a place called Gehenna that can swallow up evil people and it already exists, great. And if it doesn't exist yet, because you haven't yet created it, do me a favor and make it so that we can get rid of Korach and his men. So the Gemara says, Lamai, what does this really mean? Ilema lemivriye mamish v'ha en kol chadash tachas ha-shemesh. If Moshe was requesting from God to actually create something new that didn't previously exist, that's not possible, because don't we know, it says in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. God doesn't create anything new. So ela lekarove pischa, but really what Moshe was praying for is, God, I'm here out in the middle of the desert. If the portal of Gehenna is nearby, fantastic. If not, do me a favor, drill a new hole that'll bring it right near me so that we can get rid of Korach. And then the Gemara says, Uvnei Korach lo mesu. The Torah tells us that even though Korach was swallowed up alive with the rest of his rebellion, nevertheless, the sons of Korach did not die. Tana Mishum Rabbeinu Amru, there's a statement in the name of our teacher which says, Mokom Nispatzer Lahem Begehinam. There was actually, they too were swallowed, Korach's sons. But what happened was is that there was a little ledge in this pit that opened up. And they hung on to the ledge, the Yashvu Alav, and they sat on it, Va'amru Shira, and that's when they sang to God and proclaimed that God is their Lord. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Zim Nachada Hava Ka'azlina Bu'urcha. So Rabba Bar Bar Chana actually tells us a story. He says, once I was walking on the road, Amar Li Hahutaya, an Arab comes over to me and tells me as follows, Tova Ach Bilach Bilu'e Dekorach. Come, I'll show you the exact spot where Korach and his men were swallowed up. Azil Chazat Tari Bizei Dehava Kanafki Kitriminayu. And I went and I noticed that there were two fissures in the ground right next to each other, and there was smoke coming out of both of them. Shakal givava de imra, amashye maya. So this Arab then took a ball of wool, dipped it in water, and va'osfe beresh rumche va'al chepe hasam. He then stuck the wet ball of wool at the end of a stick and stuck the stick into one of the fissures. Ichrach. And he pulled it out, and it was singed. Amar li, atzis mashamas. And then he told me, listen, put your ear down to the ground and listen what's coming out of the fissure. V'shamois tahavu ka'amri hachi. And I heard voices saying as follows. Moshe v'saraso emes v'hein badoim. Moshe and his Torah are true, and we are the false ones. Amar lei kol tlasin yomim mahadru lehu gehenem kibasar besoch kalachas v'amri hachi Moshe v'saraso emes v'hein badoim. And he told me, you know what? Every 30 days, the people who are in Gehenem get overturned like a piece of meat boiling in a pot. And every 30 days, when they get overturned and come back to the top of the pot, they cry out, Moshe and his Torah is true, and we are the false ones. That's the end of the Gemara. Now, what does that Gemara really mean? I leave that up to you to consider. But clearly, the Gemara is giving us a very real, a very visceral illustration of the existence of some kind of portal to Gehenna, whether it's a portal to another dimension. The Gemara describes the entire expanse of Gehenna as being much, much larger than our entire universe. And so it's very difficult to imagine or to really fathom what Chazal mean, because time and space, all these other things are relative to our physical universe, and Gehenna seems to occupy a different dimension. So these kinds of stories are very difficult to understand, but the reason why I wanted you to get a handle on some of the things that the rabbis tell us is because I wanted us to look at an essay from Rav Dessler together. Let's take a look. Very quickly. It's on the other side of the page. This is from Michtav Me'eliyahu, Volume 1, page 299. Rav Dessler has an essay on Gehenna. And he states as follows. He says, V'yesh davar pela u'me'uyam b'masechas gehinam peregimel. I mentioned last week that there's a tractate called the Tractate Gehenna. It's one of the minor tractates. It's not one of the things we learn in Daf Yomi, fortunately. It's actually a post-Talmudic midrash, but they call it a maseches anyway. It's from the period of the Gaonim. And it's a compilation of various midrashim, midrashic literature. And it presents, goes by topic. There are a number of different masechtos ketanos like that. There's maseches derech eretz. There's maseches gehinom. There are many, many different masechtos like that. He says, V'yesh davar pelo umuyam b'maseches gehenem per gimel. Listen to what it says over here. It says, B'chol erev Shabbos molichen osam lebeis harei shaleg. Every erev Shabbos, they take the souls in gehenem to two big mountains of snow. And it's not right outside Toronto. But someplace where there's an Arctic vortex. I love that phrase. That's what it makes. It explains everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just 30 below. No, it's an Arctic vortex. So that explains everything. Okay. Umeinichen osam shav. And they put the souls that were in Gehenim all week, and right before Shabbos begins, they place them between these two mountains of snow. And like Rav Dessler inserts in his parentheses, he says, "Ein lahem me'etzim kedushas haShabbos klum." These souls do not really experience the real kedusha of Shabbos, but elarak she shomrasam mitzaar tumasam. But what happens is that if a person was shomer Shabbos in this life, at least they have enough protection that they don't have to experience the burning of Gehenna on Shabbos. You have a little bit of respite. You get to cool off one day a week after a week of burning. Uvimotsoi Shabbos machzirin osam lemekomim b'Gehenna. When Shabbos is over, the souls go back to Gehenna. By the way, this is codified in Jewish law, believe it or not. And as you would think, what does this have to do with religious practice? There's a prayer that all men say, Motzoi Shabbos, Vihi Noam. You know that prayer, the paragraph in Tehillim, Vihi Noam? That's at the end of the Maariv service. And the Ramah says that the reason why we say that is as consolation words to the souls that are returning back to Gehenna. And so we say that kapitel because we actually acknowledge that there's some kind of transformation that even souls in Gehenna experience over Shabbos. That right before they have to leave, what these neshamalas do, because they know that they got to go back into that place of tremendous heat and burning, is they take a couple of snowballs, one in each hand, and stick them underneath their armpits so that they'll be able to stay cool for a few extra minutes. What an illustration, right? Kidei litzaneno sam, yemei hachol, over the course of the week. So, v'hakadosh baruch hu omer lahem, and God says to them, Rishoyim, oy lachem, wicked ones, woe are you. Sha'af b'gehinam atem gozlim. Even in Gehenna, you're thieves. It's not enough that you were dastardly when you were alive. Even after death, you have the chutzpah to go and steal in the divine realm of Gehenna. We have a pasuk in Iyov that supports this whole illustration. That even in the Sheol, even in the pit of Gehenim, is their sinfulness. That's the end of the Medrash. So Rav Dessler is very blown away by this Medrash in Maseches Gehenim. And he says, Hama'amar tamua limadai. He said, this is just so amazing, he says. How can it be that you're already dead, you see truth before you everywhere, you recognize the foolishness of your life because you're burning it, you're experiencing the penalties of a life not lived well. So how can it be that at that point of your existence you're still going to commit sins? Is there even free will that exists once you die that permits you the option to steal? And furthermore, can snow that doesn't even belong to the person actually cool them off in the world of absolute truth? What kind of merit that is not theirs, meaning that's not rightfully theirs, how can it help them in the place of ultimate truth and ultimate reality? How can you even think that in this kind of real realm, that the holiness of Shabbos, which is embodied by the snow of those mountains, can actually be taken with them into the week to cool them off? And they're going to steal it, and they have no connection to it intrinsically. How can they take something that is not connected to them, that they don't have permission to take? How can it even help? So you see, he's asking all of these questions. He says, I just don't get it. What is this saying? This whole medrash makes absolutely no sense. Aval. So this is part of a much longer essay, but I just wanted to read a few lines of his answer. He says, Perish inyan zehu mavil. He says, this is truly frightening, this whole idea. V'yeshbo musar nora. And there's a very, very powerful musar that we can take from it. Tzarech lada'a shehagehinom einenu mitakein, einenu milamedet hatov klal. Being in Gehenim does not rectify your personality. It doesn't automatically turn you into a good person. I'm in Gehenim now. Now I see the truth, and I'm automatically good. All of my personality and character flaws, right, have now been completely remedied. I see the light. That's not how it works. That's not what Gehenim does. HaGehenim mechale es hara. What Gehenim does is that it slowly burns away, and that's really why it's described as burning. Because really, what is fire in a non-physical realm? What it is a process of removing, exfoliating, I guess you could say, all of the bad that I've accumulated in my personality, in my essence of my being throughout my life. But it's a slow process, and certainly it doesn't happen overnight. So over the course of time, there's still going to be, and certainly in the earlier stages of Gehenim, there's still bad that still exists within the individual. Maybe it's not as intense and complete as it was when we were alive, but it's still there. And of course we know that there's a world of truth and there's a world of falsehood. People mistakenly think that as soon as you die, you're immediately in the Olam HaEmes. You're in the world of truth. But it doesn't work that way. That's a false hashkafa, that's a false view. He says, when we say that a person is in a world of falsehood, it means that the falsehood is contained within the person. Just because you die doesn't mean that automatically you're completely transformed. Your personality remains with you even after death. You have to re-educate yourself. It's not such a simple process. That's why we talk about when people die, where does the soul linger? The soul lingers by the body because it's not used to having to go through this transformational process. It still feels very much a part of this world. And it's a very slow process. Part of that, that's what Gehenim is. It's a re-education. An exfoliation of all of the connections that I had to the physical, flaws of my existence, and hara atzmo hu alma deshikra, ki be'emes ein efsharut mitziyut lara. He says evil is part of the world of falsehood because evil cannot exist in the world of truth. V'zehu asher yered alav ha'adam la'achar chet asher yarad alav ha'adam la'achar chet adam harishon. This is actually what inhered within man after the original sin, which is what the Rambam talks about. Ulafiza kolzman sheyesh benefesh min hara, asher zakuk hagehinom lechaloto, hinei hanefesh ahi adayin ba'alma deshikra. He says, as long as a person is still going through that exfoliation, that cleansing process of Gehenim, he still has inhering and adhering to him this evil. That takes a while to remove. So therefore, even after death, a person has to go through that process of expiation, of expunging, the evil. So during that process, you're going to go over to the mountain and try to chaperon as much as you can, because you still feel very much a part of what you were. Your personality doesn't change overnight. You really are the same person that you were 5 minutes ago when your body and soul were connected, and it's a slow educational process. It can take up to 12 months, as we know. Right? And the more saintly and righteous a person was in this world, the shorter the educational period is. Sometimes you need a full 12 months. Sometimes you need a little bit less. That's why we say Kaddish only 11 months, right? We say Kaddish only 11 months for a parent who is deceased, because we believe that the Kaddish helps in the educational process, because when Kaddish is recited, the decedent hears the Kaddish. The decedent in some way is connected to that Kaddish of that sanctification of God, and it helps the decedent actually find that education in a more, in an easier fashion. We don't say it a full 12 months, because that would be disrespectful to my parent, because that would suggest that perhaps my parent needed the full 12 months of education. So that's disrespectful. So we don't say it for a full 12 months. We don't say it for less than 11 months, because what if they did need it? So you have to create some kind of balance, and that's the rabbis came up with the balance of 11 months. Okay? That's what I wanted you to see about the idea of Gehinom. There is a lot more in Masechet Gehinom of these kinds of ideas. Yes?
So is Gehinom a place that, as you said, with the Kaddish for 11 months, that's where people's souls go for 12 months, up to 12 months, or is it somewhere permanent? And that would then explain why we still have evil in the world and within us all, like we all have this temptation for various things, perhaps. Or
right, no.
Otherwise, we'd imagine by now that there wouldn't be any more souls if they were all sort of contained in this jail of Gehinnom.
So there are multiple ways for a person's soul to travel after death. A person is considered fortunate if after they die, their soul goes straight to Gehenna, lingers there, finds expiation and cleansing, and then is immediately transferred to the Garden of Eden. But that doesn't always happen. And as a matter of fact, according to the Arizal, in most cases today it doesn't happen anymore. What happens according to the Arizal is that you don't make it into Gehenna. God says Gehenna is for a person who's ready for the final exfoliation process and the final rectification, but you're not ready yet for that. You need to come back and live again and try to get it right. So not all souls get to go to Gehenna. We go through a process of reincarnation according to the Arizal. Not everyone subscribes to that opinion. Not everyone subscribes to a belief in reincarnation in Judaism, but that seems to be the consensus opinion.